But right now, again, wrapping up with Alonso, I do believe that the Mets certainly in play. Not sure anything is going to happen anytime soon. The other teams I would mention at this moment, and again, it's a fluid situation. I think the Jays, the Angels, Giants, and I'm throwing the Reds in there. I don't know if they should be mentioned. I haven't seen that link yet, but to me, they do make sense. They do seem to be active. They signed Austin Hayes. Good signing. Like that. They are working hard. So to me, that does make sense. But again, I'm not giving up on the Mets. Doesn't sound like anything's too close based on what Steve Cohen told the Met fans at Met Fan Fest at Citi Field on Saturday. But I do think that perhaps they can figure it out, come to some kind of equitable understanding since the structure of the deal is in place right now. It's just the money. The money is the difference, and as it always is, right? It's always about the money. What would you put the chances? I'm getting chats now by text. I like it. All right. What would you put the chances that Alonso returns to the Mets? I still think it's 50, at least 50-50, that he ends up back with the Mets. Maybe I'm being optimistic from a New Yorker's standpoint, but they're still talking, certainly talking about it. I think they're talking to each other. I think that Steve Cohen likes Alonso. I think he recognizes the fans love Alonso, have a great affinity for the polar bear. And I do believe Steve Cohen does get what he wants.
We also feel really good about the young players who are coming through our system, who have the ability to play at the major league level. We saw that last year, and that's not always the most popular opinion, but we saw that last year. And we're going to need to see it again.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, February the 2nd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter for less than a cup of coffee a month, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You know why we know it's baseball season? Because the Super Bowl's next week, and that's the demarcation line. At least in the world of baseball, in the world of Talking Mets, the winter doesn't end next Sunday, February 9th. We know that. But you kind of now know it's baseball season once the Super Bowl. And some people say once Championship Sunday, when the NFC and AFC have their championship games, that's kind of the end because the Super Bowl is more of that non-hardcore football fan event. But we'll use Super Bowl Sunday. We typically don't have a show on Super Bowl Sunday. We'll see how we play this week out. Hopefully we have some Pete Alonso news. We'll get into that a little bit. I don't want to get more into Alonso. We have exhausted that conversation. OMG, is that the end of Jose Iglesias? I don't think the signing of a backup optionable infielder is the end of Jose Iglesias. I think when you listen to what David Stearns had to say at Amazing Day, you could get an idea of why it's the end of Jose Iglesias. We'll get into that. And then the big conversation after the break is acquiring an ace. Not knowing what's going to happen with Alonso. And I'll give you some crazy numbers to make you really chew on Alonso. But even with Alonso, is the Mets starting pitching, the Riverboat Gambler rotation that we talked about, good enough? And if an ace becomes available, and there may be one, Dylan Cease, I talked about it a little bit, or wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic. Should the Mets go all in? Is he a solution? What are the ramifications of making a deal for Cease? That'll be the big topic of conversation as we head to the end of the Hot Stove edition. This might be our last one before our annual pitchers and catchers report. So hope everybody's doing well. And I know that this is day, what, number 90 of our Pete Alonso long national nightmare. You hear all sorts of rumors. Boomer Esiason promised us that Pete would be re-signed on Friday. He was not. You hear all these other independent voices giving their opinion of what they hear or don't hear about Alonso. The media in general feels that it just makes too much sense. Almost like you hear that old inconvenient marriage. Well, this is not an inconvenient marriage. This is a convenient marriage. The Mets need a power hitter. They need another bat for Soto. First base or corner position is really, and DH is really all they can possibly fit that bat in. And right now, whether it be because of his age, the last two not so great years, the position being valued differently, the draft pick compensation attached to him, Pete Alonso doesn't have a market except for Toronto. And I think that it's pretty common sense to believe that if that offer was the best out there and the Mets weren't involved, Pete would be a Blue Jay. Now, don't you worry. I know there's some people saying, well, Mike, even more news. There's going to be big tariffs on Pete's contract. I'm going to get myself in trouble here with this. No, the tariffs don't have any impact on this. It has no impact on Pete's contract. Now, if Pete wants to buy mayonnaise or some kind of United States good, then possibly that'll have an impact or sway his decision. I have a feeling it has nothing to do with Pete Alonso not going to Toronto and being a Blue Jay. We'll see where that goes. But here's what's interesting. So Joel Sherman wrote a piece on, I think it was Friday, about the energy of the organization. And it ties a lot into what I said after the season about leveraging the OMG good vibes and LCS run. It was very, very important in the context of the history of this organization to leverage it. And Sherman got a little bit into that, and he compared it to the Jets when Darrell Revis held out during Hard Knocks, I believe it was 2011, and how when they ended Hard Knocks, the bump that the Jets got of energy. In some ways, I'll use an even a different analogy, and it's certainly this player was not nearly at the level of Alonso, but if you remember after 2015, if I'm not mistaken, Dexter Fowler, who was a piece of the Cubs, you know, an on-base leadoff guy, center fielder, a good piece to the 2015 Cubs. I don't think he got signed that year. And if I'm not mistaken, and don't quote me on this, he's a Boris client. But he didn't get signed till spring training. And I remember the Cubs had all these great vibes, despite losing to the Mets in 2015 and having that disappointing end to what they thought was a magical season when they won 100 games. What I remember is that Fowler gets signed maybe during pitchers and catchers or early in spring, and he shows up and the Cubs all kind of as a group kind of like rally around him and start cheering and chanting almost like a football team in the huddle. So maybe that's a better analogy, but there is something to Sherman talking about energy. Now, I don't agree with Sherman. I don't think the Mets have not leveraged the vibes. I mean, just by gaining Soto into the lineup and building a linchpin, an in-prime linchpin that will be their, hub, their offensive hub for the next decade plus, along with Lindor in his prime and with some of the young players that may be coming along, Beatty, who's now in the mix, Mauricio, Jet Williams, Acuna, we'll get into them. Obviously, Vientos, who's just emerging, it gives for some excitement. Now, I know in an environment where the organization went all out for Soto, but then decided to go more value-driven or analytically driven, maybe with filling out the rotation, I thought they did a good job in the bullpen bringing Stanek back and Minter, and I know they're still looking maybe potentially at some other arms. It's getting crowded, especially with the options, and that's a conversation that'll be an early spring training conversation. Bringing anybody in, and this ties into Iglesias, bringing anybody in is not just a 40-man roster situation, but it's a situation that requires ramifications to potentially players that may be out of options and what have you. But let's just look at this. So I don't necessarily buy the vibes part that Sherman's saying. I do think that the variability that right now, the corner spot, let's assume Vientos moves to first, and your third base situation is Acuna and Brett Beatty, and maybe Mauricio at some point, or maybe we're not even, thinking about somebody right now, because, who knows who becomes available. I mean, Sherman points out in the piece, it is easier to get yourself a bat. Look, I think this kid, Jared Young from Korea, that's been in a career minor leaguer, lefty bat. I mean, I've seen some of the Baseball Prospectus guys on X talk about how he can give you similar to the elite Alonzo, not the early career Alonzo, the recent year Alonzo production as a lefty bat. You know, maybe I brought up Jesus Aguilar. Maybe they found themselves there, you know, in the old trash or treasure. They found themselves a treasure in the scrap heap that could give them some of what potentially Alonzo, walked out the door. Now, I personally think they're going to work something out. I don't think Boomer Esiason would have just thrown that out there for no reason. The fact that he hasn't signed, unless Pete and Boris, and Pete's very foolish for doing this, are going to sit around until March and see if anybody goes down in spring training or a team starts to look and go, I like my club. Pete Alonso's bat and power in the middle will get me will force me to give him a deal above and beyond what he's getting now. I don't see where he's going anywhere. I have a feeling that they're maybe working on some things in the back end. I don't know anything. But I do understand when Sherman says that Stearns is looking at this 89-win OMG NLCS Mets team and looking at the offense on this team and factoring in current Pete Alonso production, he's not so sure that the Mets have to do what the fans want the Mets to do, what the media wants the Mets to do, which is get Alonso at all costs. And not, obviously, they're not approaching this in the same manner like they approach the Soto negotiations. Now, I use their old back-of-the-paper-bag math type of, and, you know, roll your eyes all you want. This is what we do here at the Talking Mets podcast. And I put in, using the projections over at FanGraphs, the Zips projections. Zip, Steamer, I don't care. I picked one. I think I picked Zip, so it doesn't matter. And I put in the lineup right now that would have Lindor and Soto and Vientos at first and Nimmo in the outfield and McNeil at second and Winker and combination of Winker and Marte at DH and Jose Siri in center field. You know, maybe Tyrone Taylor bumps this up a little bit if he gets the job because of his bat. Francisco Alvarez behind the plate. And then, obviously, at third, some combination of Beatty, Acuna, Mauricio. And I threw in some numbers based on the projections they have out there. And right now, and this is where the Soto effect comes into play and where we talked about how, the Yankees lineup changed the day that they brought Soto in and teamed him up with Judge and created a modern-day Maris and Mantle. But right now the Mets, according to, if you use those projections and you take the musings calculator that we've used in the past, the Mets, who averaged skush over 4.7 runs a game last year, are going to be averaging 5 runs a game. That's good. 5 runs a game is a nice number to put you in a position where you should win a lot of ball games, even on the days where maybe you don't get the best starting pitching. Maybe you give yourself, I'm not saying it's going to be a bully offense. If you look up and down this offense, there's going to be brownouts. You know, when your Lindors and Sotos aren't hitting, and if you can't get Vientos and Alvarez and McNeil to, you know, pick up the slack, you may have some parts of that lineup, and God help if Alvarez has another bad down year, when you have the Alvarez, Siri, Winker part of the lineup, you may start to see some brownouts when the big guys are slumping. But, you know, we'll see. Let's stand back a little bit on that. But, that's where Stearns is at right now. And he's like, okay, that's pretty good. Now, if you add Alonso's production from last year, you just take the same exact on-base slugging kind of year he had in 2024, and you plug that into this same lineup, and you remove the Beatty, Acuna, Mauricio projections blended together, the Mets go from 5.04 runs per game to 5.13, a tenth of a run. Now, it's certainly anytime you're going north on the runs per game, you that's a good thing, but that's not going to change you or prevent you from being an 89, 90, 91, 92 win team. They obviously feel that they're as good, if not better, than the team they had last year. Alonso coming in, or the Alonso version they saw last year, and to a certain degree the year before, not moving the needle that much. Now you say, well, Mike, you know, what if Alonso really, this is a come-to-Jesus moment in his career, he's working out, you know, he gets a short-term deal with maybe an opt-out after year one or year two, so he's going to be in the best shape of his life, the most focused, maybe some things because of the change in agent in the free agency, maybe that was hanging over his head. That's all fair. I have no problem with that mindset or that conversation. So let's take Alonso statistically, from an offensive standpoint, his best season, which turned out to be his rookie year, 2019. And it's funny because we talked about this when Pete was coming in way before COVID wrecked the 2020 season. We talked about this, how it's crazy that his first year in the league might go down as his best year, and how the expectations are always going to be very high on Pete Alonso. Now, he had some decent seasons in 21 and 22 post-COVID that were very acceptable, even though that may be a skitch below his rookie year. But taking his rookie year, his best, you know, hit 53 home runs, and you know, it seemed like every big moment, anytime he willed himself to hit a home run, Pete was there hitting a home run. It was the most amazing thing maybe I've seen in watching the Mets during my time over, you know, almost 40 years, 35 years, whatever it may be. The Mets go from 5.04 runs a game to 5.37. Now, that's a decent 0.3 of a run jump, and that works, but that is assuming that Pete Alonso and the version that you're getting is going to give you a season that he has not in 6 years, a season that he did coming out of the minor leagues. The league maybe didn't completely know him. Obviously, there was a period of time where the league, yeah, you know what, let's throw him a fastball. Juice ball, we know that 2019 was the juice ball year. So Stearns is sitting here, and I understand where he's at and where Cohen's at. They're like, hey, we hold a lot of the leverage. This has been a masterclass of negotiation by Cohen, because he went to Amazing Day, probably thinking that Pete was gone. We thought Pete, there was even fake rumors that he had signed with Toronto. He goes there, the fans are chanting, we want Pete, we want Pete. Stearns plays good politician and tries to say, hey, we love Pete, but we also like our young players. And Cohen jumps in and says, no, 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 I don't think the negotiations are going well. And right now, I don't see how there's a pathway to get Pete on the roster, because as we build out our roster, as we continue to increase our payroll, it might be harder to fit you in. All of a sudden, Pete's saying to himself, wow, like, I might not be a Met. Like, it starts to sink in. And if you believe the rumors, that's what's elicited maybe a reopening of the dialogue between the Mets and Alonso. And where they're at, we don't know. All you do is hear a lot of smoke. And I believe, and maybe it won't happen until after the Super Bowl, or maybe this thing, and if this thing drags out past this week, I got to wonder what the hell is going on here. Because, you know, now it's getting silly. But, and I have a feeling something will move for Pete this week, one way or the other. Just, and I've been saying that for a while, right? I thought that after New Year and the holiday. But I think they'll work something out. But again, that goes where the analytics goes into play. And I think this ties into everybody freaking out on Friday, you know, about this signing. You know, how many times do you sign an optionable middle infielder, Nick Madrigal, I think that's how you pronounce it, light hitter, contact middle infielder, third baseman, second baseman, you know, that kind of guy, has options. A guy that hits probably like 220, a defense-first guy, basically Zach Short. All of a sudden, it's, oh my God, you know, the Mets are letting Jose Iglesias and OMG go. Now, OMG and Grimace and all the vibes from 2024, I think that has to be left in 2024. It was fun. You know, maybe there'll be some component of it that'll resurface, but that died the day the Dodgers eliminated the Mets in Game 6. Now, the Mets currently have 40 guys on the roster. And even if they sign Pete Alonso tomorrow, they're going to have to make a corresponding move. Now, that might not be that hard. You got some guys on this roster, the Jose Azokar potentially could get dropped. You know, maybe even this Jared Young, you know, this kid I just talked about, maybe he gets optioned off the roster at some point. You know, you look, I don't think they're going to throw any pitchers to the Wolves because, you know, it's kind of, but, you know, who knows, a Kevin Hergett. Jason Hagenman, you know, who knows if there is a pitcher they look at and say, hey, we're going to move it, you know, move off of them. You know, for Pete Alonso, when you add in Jose Iglesias as well, potentially, well, now, you know, again, you could maybe even dump Madrigal. I mean, I don't know how that contract looks. I mean, it's a split contract. You could potentially do that. But I think more importantly, let's just be honest about where the Mets roster is. Forget about the 40 man at this point, because the Mets are going to carry 13 pitchers, so there's only going to be 13 offensive players. There's the starting lineup, which right now, let's just assume Beatty at third and Vientos at short. So you have Lindor, Soto, Vientos, Nimmo, Winker, Alvarez, McNeil, Siri, Beatty. That's your starting lineup. Let's just say for argument's sake. You have Torrens as your backup catcher. You have Marte splitting time with Winker at DH and maybe playing a little outfield. And then you have Tyrone Taylor, who may get the starting job over Siri, or they'll have some kind of offense-defense combination where Taylor could also, you know, sub in and allow Nimmo to DH. There's a lot of things Taylor could do. At that point, and you add Acuna to the mix, who, you know, the Stearns has talked about the young kids. There's your 13. Your bench right now is Torrens, Acuna, Marte, Taylor. Now, you could trade Marte. Maybe you trade him for some bullpen help. There's been talk about that because you have Taylor. You have McNeil, who gives you flexibility in the outfield. Obviously, Winker could play the outfield. You have some flexibility where you don't necessarily need Marte on the roster. But Marte, as a against lefty platoon player, that showed some life and had some big hits down the stretch. Not a guy that I would just pay down to dump. Like, if you're going to owe him money, maybe you could get something out of him. And Stearns was pretty clear. If they're willing to try young kids like Beatty, maybe Mauricio at some point, and not sign Alonso, I don't see room for Iglesias. And I think that is a mistake because I think Acuna, to me, is an interesting player because Acuna could be kind of your Swiss Army knife. I don't see him as an everyday player. I don't think he's going to hit enough. I think that they lacked a real backup shortstop, and they're very fortunate that Lindor is somebody that really never comes out, but Acuna would provide that in a way that they really haven't had that. McNeil could play a little bit shortstop, I think, in a pinch. I don't see how that would work. And then you would be going down into your AAA depth. What are you going to bring up? An Eddie Alvarez type? That's kind of where you were at the end of the year last year. And that's where Madrigal, I think, falls into, is a better version of that because of the options. Maybe he has some kind of opt-out where if he's not in the big league club by a certain time, they can let him go in June or whatever. Not a conversation that's important. But Acuna is a guy that I don't think is going to hit enough to play every day. But in the role that Iglesias can give you, and do better. Now, Iglesias was a third baseman, second baseman, but Acuna could add shortstop. He could add the outfield into the play. You have yourself a right-handed McNeil with a lot of versatility, and he'll still get at-bats. I mean, look, Siri doesn't hit. Taylor has his ups and downs. There's going to be maybe a need as Lindor hits the age of 31, 32, as now he's entering not quite his late prime, but he's getting there. He might need a blow as well to DH or maybe not even play. Acuna comes into that. Now, everybody acts like Acuna is going to steal the job from McNeil, maybe at second base. I think it's more likely, and I've heard Dick Scott thinks he could play the outfield, that center field is a real possibility for Acuna, which would explain why they're willing to maybe go with the Siri, a guy on a low cost, you know, defense only kind of player at that point. So, personally, if you're mad about Iglesias not being on this roster, the answer is he's not on this roster because of Acuna. Maybe you could say Marte. And the other thing is what the kind of offer they made Madrigal. I have a feeling they offered Iglesias similar to the situation where, like, hey, make the team. We'll put you on the 40-man, make the team, have a split contract. You may have to go down to Syracuse. Obviously, he didn't hire Scott Boras as his agent to do that. But at some point, Iglesias will get a job. But the more and more you see about how the league is going, all these free agents sitting around, teams are very willing to use young, cost-controlled players or league-average component players over an expensive veteran. It's a shame because I think Iglesias, and it's not just because of the music and the clubhouse, I think he hits lefties well. I think he's excellent defensively at third base. I know when you saw more of him in the postseason, it wasn't quite the same offensive player that hit 900 OPS and hit 330, but he was a very useful player. Had some big hits against the Phillies, and I think he's a good veteran to have. And we don't even know what Acuna will be in spring training. Acuna goes in spring training, is 1-for-25, and doesn't look ready. He's going to be ticketed for Syracuse. He does have options left this year. But that's the other thing. You got to start making a decision on Acuna. That's assuming that Acuna, and that's what we'll do after the break and talk about, isn't jettisoned in a trade for an arm. We're assuming that the Mets aren't going to make any more trades, which sounds like they may be in the mix for Dylan Cease. So, I don't see how Madrigal is the reason why the OMG world is done, other than what they're looking for to be a depth piece. In the minor leagues is not what Iglesias' profile is anymore. It's just not. But when you start to look at where the Mets are at on the positional side, and when you add in the Beatty, the Mauricios, who knows if Jet Williams gets in the mix? I don't think so. When you add in Acuna, he made it clear at Amazing Day, Stearns, that they were going to play the young players. And I don't see how, at this point, any kind of move would be different than that. I think Alonso's the only offensive move that they're willing to make, unless they're going to trade a Marte, that would maybe push them to take time away from a young kid. And I think if you really had them in a corner with the truth serum, and if Alonso doesn't hit that home run in Milwaukee, and he's not Pete, the personality, he's just another corner hitting outfielder, hits 30 home runs. He's Bob Hamlin. I'm throwing you a name from the 90s that fizzled out. Or he's Richie Sexton back in the day. You want to do something like that. I don't know if there's the same affinity. I think this is all, like Joel Sherman said, fan emotion and energy about the personality of the player, less about what the player is. If you strip away the name from the baseball card, I want Pete back. I'm not saying don't sign Pete. I am just trying to say to you guys, hey, I understand where they're going, and I understand why we are where we are. I don't understand what Alonso's doing, because I think the tea leaves are pretty much set on his side. Take a deal with Toronto. I'm even reading maybe Anaheim's not even in the mix. You know, I loved how Heyman tried to throw the Reds in there a day after he used them as a speculative team on his own show. And I laughed because I'm like, well, you know, John, we know your connection to Boris. I'm not saying he's doing anything underhanded. I'm not trying to go old WFAN on John here. I like John. But throwing teams out to kind of like give some life to the fact that there's more demand for Pete Alonso than there really is. I mean, it's just, I don't think the Mets care. And truthfully, I think David Stearns, if Pete signed with Toronto tomorrow, would not feel his team is in a worse place. And I think he feels that it's a fixable position. He's right. Now, from a marketing standpoint, from a PR standpoint, and from a variability, because similar to going out there and fungible with the bullpen, and you go through those times where the guys you thought were going to be solutions are not, and you blow games, and you're trying to piece things together, and then finally you put it together by going out and acquiring certain players. You may have yourself a black hole at first base at some point, and Pete's out in Toronto hitting 40 home runs and looking a little bit more like the Pete from 2022 than the Pete from 2024. God forbid he looks like the Pete from 2019. Now you got yourself a problem. Now, if he signs a crazy deal that everybody agrees, hey, the Mets shouldn't go there, it's going to age poorly, that's different. I don't think he's going to get that from the Blue Jays. I think what you're looking at is a 2 or 3 year contract when you talk about opt-outs and everything. And I think it comes down to how they're going to handle the money and the deferrals and try to mitigate some of the 90% tax that Cohen is going to have. So the way I look at it is, you know, we're a week from the Super Bowl. Pitchers and catchers are around the corner. The journey will begin. We'll be doing this all together. And right now, I think there's only one possible acquisition that's not going to be a minor league deal. And think about it. The rumor is they offered Mark Canna a non-roster deal invite to come to spring training. They're offering a Mark Canna, who's an established hitter as well, and has been more established than Iglesias over the last couple of years. I mean, Iglesias is not going to get a contract. And that's probably what they said. Hey, come to spring training, earn a position again. Let's see if you still have what you have. And that sucks. Veteran players in this game, and a lot of it has to do with the inflation cost of top-tier talent. And this, there's the component of owners that don't want to spend. But analytics has pushed veteran ball players and the things that they provide, the non-tangible analytical things they provide, into the abyss. And I think it sucks. I am not sold on Acuna. I am interested to see what he could provide. And I will tell you, if he has a decent enough bat in like a 300 to 350 at-bat sample, I don't think he's an everyday player, and maybe I'll be wrong, and he could play all those positions, I said, pretty much three infield positions and the outfield, including center field, that's a valuable Swiss Army knife to have on the bench. I think a lot of the expectations about his ceiling because of his brother are unfair, but he's got speed. He seems to be decent defensively when he played that week and subbed in for Lindor and was big. I mean, he was a big reason why they made the postseason. Don't discount it. I understand how important he was for them making the postseason in 24, but I'm not ready to hand over a starting position or, based on the fact that he had a sub-700 OPS in AAA last year, say that, well, that doesn't count and he's going to be all of a sudden something that he's not. So anyway, that's where we're at with Alonso. That's where we're at with OMG Iglesias. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, part two, second half of the show, we're going to get into the pitching staff. Not the bullpen. I don't want to talk about the bullpen today, but the starting pitching. Do the Mets need an ace? I talked about over at Beyond the Mic, if you're a subscriber, Mets history and another Mets team that was similar in pitching to this version, went out and got an ace and won a pennant. Does an ace or a top, I should say, 10 pitcher in baseball make a difference to this Mets team? And how far should they go to acquire that pitcher? And is Dylan Cease that guy? We'll talk about that and more right after this.
His name has come up frequently in trade discussions and trade possibilities, according to reports, as the San Diego Padres potentially are looking at moving the hard-throwing right-hander. And look at this. The New York Mets, according to our John Heyman, have reportedly begun discussions with the Padres about a potential deal that would send Dylan Cease to Queens. You see, the most strikeouts in Major League Baseball since the start of 2021. Look, I'm not surprised that he's at the top of the list. I'm surprised that it's almost 900.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Since 2021. This is a guy that is a hard thrower. He is a strikeout pitcher. What do you make of Cease possibly to the Mets?
This makes sense to me, Roflo, because I think the Mets need another starter. I really do. I know they brought back Manaea. Senga's coming back too. Mm. But when I look at that rotation, I still think, man, if they could get one more starter in that rotation, a front-of-the-line starter, a legit number one, Dylan Cease is that legit number one. So, wow, that would be a huge acquisition for the Mets if they could make that happen.
I wonder, and I agree with you here, as you look at the rotation as it stands now for the New York Mets, I wonder what the return, a potential return, would look like.
Yeah.
You know, Brett Beatty seems to be blocked a little bit at third with the emergence of Vientos, assuming they don't move Vientos to first base. You got Luis Angel Acuña. I don't know if either one of those guys would be involved.
I don't know if Acuña would be involved. Beatty might be involved, but they do have some pieces. They do have some prospects down there to trade. But when you look at that rotation, see what I'm saying? Like Clay Holmes, hey, listen, Clay's great, but he's been a closer for the last few years. That's kind of like a reclamation project. Frankie Montas, to me, is more like a five in that rotation.
Yeah.
So, you know, Peterson was really good, but he's young. Senga's health last year. So when you start to break that rotation down, you don't feel super confident.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But if you get a Dylan Cease and put him at the top of the rotation, you're feeling a lot different.
And also remember, Dylan Cease is entering his walk year. So if the Mets get a chance to acquire him, you would figure that the Mets would be among those bidders that would be highly in regard for his services once he hits free agency.
Yeah. So.
All right, we're back. So a lot of rumors about the Mets' involvement in Dylan Cease. And it was no secret that they went out and they tried to get Garrett Crochet earlier in the offseason. They lost out to the Red Sox on that. And look, there's no secret that the Mets could use some pitching help. Because if you go, and I'm just basing this on the projections out there, and, you know, Fangraphs does a good job. I'm not here to say that, you know, to diss on them or anything. Projection is just that, somebody's projection system and opinion. But right now, Clay Holmes is projected to be their best starter. And you look at what they project David Peterson, who had a great year last year, and Kodai Senga, who, you know, may or may not be healthy. And they've actually have Sean Manaea having some regression on innings pitched and performance, and then some combination. I mean, I can't believe they actually have Christian Scott in the mix. I mean, that's not going to happen, but with his injury. But you have Tyler McGill and Frankie Montas and a lot of potential question marks about Paul Blackburn and what, if anything, can the kids, the Brandon Sproats, the Blade Tidwells, the Nolan McClains, the Dom Hamels, if they could at all provide any kind of support. You're going to need 10 to 12 pitchers to get through the season. So there's no doubt the Mets, when you look at projections, and they probably have their own projections that are a little bit more advanced, could use an ace. And look, Dylan Cease, let's be honest about Dylan Cease before we get into some of the red flags here. Dylan Cease is an ace. Last year, he was the fifth in WAR amongst starting pitchers. Actually, I'm going to put in just starting pitchers. I had all pitchers, but he's fifth. He's fifth in WAR, you know, behind Zach Wheeler, behind Chris Sale, behind Tarek Skubal and Cole Reagans of Kansas City. But You know, he's fifth over there, and that's from last year. And if you go back to 2021 and look at the top pitchers in baseball since COVID, Wheeler number one, Corbin Burns number two, Gausman number three, Aaron Nola number four, Logan Webb number five, Dylan Cease number six, ahead of Gerrit Cole, ahead of Framber Valdez, ahead of Max Fried, who just got this big $200+ million contract from the Yankees, ahead of Sandy Alcantara, who might become available, ahead of Luis Castillo, who, you know, some Mets fans have said the Mets should go out. So clearly he's an ace when it comes to, you know, ranking him amongst pitchers or amongst his peers. And when you look at the Mets competition, you know, forget about Alonso and the extra 10th or 3/10 of a run that you're haggling over here with the offense. The Mets clearly are at a disadvantage versus their divisional foes when it comes to pitching. The Phillies arguably have three aces. You have Wheeler, you have Nola, you have Christopher Sanchez, and now they have Jesus Luzardo. Maybe he pops into the mix. They have great pitching. Then you have Sale. You have Schwellenbach. You have Spencer Strider coming back in Atlanta. And all of a sudden, you know, obviously, Ronaldo Lopez, who had a good year, his first year out of the bullpen. You add Cease, who's rumored to be maybe on their radar. That's a really good rotation. And good pitching will always mitigate some of those brownouts that occur. And the Mets got really good starting pitching in the second half. But a lot of it had to do with them maximizing whatever the best version of those guys were day in and day out, working through the final 9 to 12 outs out of the bullpen on some days. Maybe they'll be able to navigate that a bit better with some of the moves they've made. But there's some, again, that word variability there. So it is in the Mets' best interest to knock on the Padres' door. Now, Michael King, to me, and I think that ship sailed. They just signed into a contract with some kind of option. I don't think they're going to trade him. They traded Soto for him. I would think not only would they potentially, if they were going to make up a haul for him, you don't know what you could get at the deadline as more teams crystallize and potentially are in the pennant race and could use an arm. You'd be surprised what kind of haul you can get at the deadline for someone like King. Whereas Cease, if they're, you know, potentially looking to, you know, trade him, he'd be the guy maybe right now, and he could also be fit into that category at the deadline, where maybe you get more people in on him and the haul is bigger. Now, when Corbin Burns was traded to the Orioles, they gave up two top 10 prospects. I don't see how the Mets get away with trading for Cease without giving up two top 10 prospects. Now, can you say, hey, similar to what the Yankees did with Soto, can they put a Buto in there? Jose Buto is out of options and may not make the rotation and may not be suited for the bullpen. Perhaps. But I think you're going to be looking at giving up Drew Gilbert, a Jet Williams, or a Ryan Clifford. I think potentially a pitcher like Blade Tidwell. You know, don't be surprised they ask for Brandon Sproat. We really don't know who's off limits. You know, Nolan McClain, who's some people feel could be a reliever, could be a starter. There's some debate on where he'll wind up. Jonah Tong was a name that former GM Zach Scott brought up on Baseball Night in New York over at SNY. So this is going to be a trade. If you trade for Cease, there's going to be some pain. Now, the Yankees gave up Michael King in the Soto deal. A.J. Preller is no dummy. Now, A.J. Preller went out and he gave up a bunch of prospects for relievers, one of them Tanner Scott, who's in L.A. now. And, you know, he's been known not to be shy to trade and not to be shy to go for it. Credit to Preller. Good job there. You know, there is some ownership uncertainty with the, you know, the trust and the family and what's going on over there. So I'm not sure exactly how stable things are in San Diego. So what the payroll is going to be and what they need to do now versus in season, I'm not privy to those things. But I do know this deal will come with some pain. Now, like I talked about over at Beyond the Mic, back in 1999, the Mets had a great season, went to the NLCS, lost a heartbreaker in Game 6 to the Braves. Now, you want to leverage that. You want to build on that momentum. Well, one of the things that got in the way of that team was they had Al Leiter and a bunch of number 3s, 4s, and 5s. They had an Oral Hershiser who was 40 years old go into whatever magic tricks he had left and have a halfway decent year. They had the Masato Yoshis and the Rick Reeds. Rick Reed, a solid number 3 guy. Bobby Jones, we all know that. And Al Leiter was a really good pitcher, but on a good team, Al Leiter, like he was in Miami, where he was behind Kevin Brown, he's probably number two. You know, Al was a great pitcher. He had a lot of moxie. He was a big game pitcher, but he was a number two. So what did the Mets and Steve Phillips do back then? They went out, and the guy that was available that offseason, the best, and he was a top 10, he was an ace, he had won 22 games. Maybe he wasn't an ace in the mold of Randy Johnson or Kevin Brown or Roger Clemens or anything like that, but he was an ace at the time after he won 22 games at Houston with Mike Hampton, and you know the rest is history. And Mike Hampton went out there and shut the Cardinals down in the NLCS, and without Mike Hampton and his performance in the championship series, the Mets don't go to the World Series, and we don't have a Subway Series in 2000. So can Dylan Cease be that guy? Look, I think Dylan Cease is a really good pitcher. I wrote about him a year ago when the White Sox were putting him on the market. He was coming off a below-league average year in Chicago, that he's a guy that strikes a lot of guys out. The walk rate could be a little bit high. If you go to Savant and look at Dylan Cease, he doesn't necessarily get a lot of soft hits. And his ground ball rate's not great. So when you start to look, he's a guy that if he's on and he's not walking guys and gets into favorable counts and is striking out the world, he's going to be successful. But if he's not, he's going to be hittable. And I think there's a soft underbelly to Cease. I don't think he's Zach Wheeler. I don't think he's Aaron Nola. I don't think he's Chris Sale. I think you'd be paying for somebody who's a really good pitcher and maybe a really good number two. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. And one that potentially might not be worth the squeeze, or when you start to watch him day in and day out, may not be as good as advertised. I'm not saying he won't be good. But in a lot of ways, if you remember going back to 1999 to 2000, when Hampton came over, you started to see, well, he's good, but he's not as good as he was in Houston. Maybe he had a career year. He walked a few too many guys. You know, there was talk early in the year when he struggled as he made for New York. Turned out maybe he didn't like New York all that much. He decided to leave and go to Colorado after the school systems, whatever. So I'm not saying there's any connection to that part with Cease and Hampton. But what I'm saying is I'm not so sure Cease is as good as you guys think. And I think a lot of his rankings on Fangraphs and ERA Plus and all the other things comes from the fact that he strikes a lot of guys out. We value strikeouts in a world where strikeouts are commoditized like three-pointers are commoditized, like receiving yards are commoditized in the modern NFL. And I'm not downgrading Cease. If the Mets could get him at a reasonable prospect haul, staying away from some of the top five prospects, or maybe prospects that they feel, hey, just don't fit. I mean, there's a possibility Acuna would be in this deal. There's a possibility that, I don't know if Beatty's necessary because you got Machado at third and Xander Bogaerts, so Beatty's probably not a guy. And Acuna, I don't know how they view him. I mean, I would think that pitching and young pitching and potential rebuilding of their farm system after tearing some of it apart and some of the deals they've made to go for it might be. And again, we don't know where San Diego is with this ownership transition, with the death of the owner and the family. And there's a lot of questions that we don't know. But everybody's like, well, the Mets got to go get Cease. They got to block the Braves from getting him. They got to block, you know, the Phillies got, the Marlins young pitcher, Luzardo. You know, they, and apparently from what we've read, Mets were very much in on Garrett Crochet. And I wasn't so sold on him either, if you remember. Look, if you're going to rip apart a farm system at this point, I'm not suggesting you don't go out and try to make a deal for a pitcher. Look, the Astros made a deal for Cole. They made a deal for Verlander. You could. We've talked about this. I know that nobody likes hearing this, and we don't want to admit that now even more so than ever, rosters are fungible like fantasy baseball teams. But it's okay to mess around into July, early July, with your roster if you feel it's good enough to at least land in a playoff spot, because all you're guaranteed if you win a division, and it's not even guaranteed if you're the third division winner, is you're guaranteed, you know, maybe a bye and potentially 3 to 5 games extra. Look at the Phillies. They got 4 games, and they really should have got 3. The Mets handled them 1 game. The Phillies should have been swept by the Mets. And they won a division and had a pretty good, I wouldn't say perfect season, but for a big chunk of 2024, they were the darlings of baseball. Things changed a little bit after London. So I'd be careful here. I'd be careful about going out, trading a lot for Cease, or if you're a Mets fan, thinking that you're getting Chris Sale, thinking that you're getting, you know, I know the numbers, he's better than Cole. I'm not so sure Cole is, I mean, Cole has had his ups and downs too with the Yankees. I mean, he's certainly a very good pitcher. Let's also face it, you know, today pitching, and I know Cease gives you innings, he's right there, look, he's right there with Wheeler, he's going to give you innings, he's give you strikeouts. Where he's not like Wheeler, it's not the same soft contact, I'm not sure he's the same big game pitcher. Wheeler, I knew if the Mets didn't win that game at Citi Field, Game 4, they were in for a long day at Citizens Bank Park in Game 5. The Phillies just wanted to survive Citi Field after they lost, and they were fortunate to split it at Citizens Bank the first two, after the Mets stole Game 1 with Wheeler, because they knew they had one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I know aces aren't like they used to. You don't have your Clemens vintage 1990, or your Dave Stewart's, or your Randy Johnson. I mean, I think aces back in the day, Seaver, you want to go by all-time Hall of Famers, Carlton, Bob Gibson. I'm not so sure these guys fall into that pantheon. I'll admit that. You know, Scooble's a really good pitcher. We'll see. You know, Wheeler, a really good pitcher. Nola, you know, top of the rotation guy, he's another guy. I don't always know if he's an ace, but he's certainly a very good pitcher. I think pitching is different than it ever has been. So you have to be right. This is the best, like, from the current, like, modern baseball last 3 or 4 years, you'd be acquiring a top 10 pitcher. If the haul is not something that it's painful, but not that painful, and it's fungible what they give up, go for it. If you're telling me it's Jose Buto and Blade Tidwell and shoot, maybe even Acuna and maybe one other, you know, prospect outside of the top 15, maybe a Jeremy Rodriguez who is a top 10. You know, maybe that's different. Maybe I feel differently about that. You know, after all, I don't know what Rodriguez is, a shortstop. I mean, you're not, you know, Lindor is going to be here a while. But if you're talking a very painful, you know, top, and again, I don't see how it wouldn't be painful where you're giving up prospects. I might just wait. Look, the Braves want to do whatever they want to do. Let the Braves do. Don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Don't try to keep up with the Dodgers. Don't try to keep up with the Braves and the Phillies. Be you. Be your team. And then the real question is, in a 7-game series, is Cease going to be a big difference if you tear apart everything against this monster in LA that is stacking the deck in their favor? I'm not saying give up. I'm not saying this is going to be the 80s like the Lakers in the Western Conference. I'm not saying that right now. I'm not saying that yet. That conversation is something that could come up. What I'm saying is Cease in a 7-game set starting twice going to be the difference between the Mets and the Dodgers? Because ultimately that's probably who is standing in your way for a championship. Over 32 starts, he's certainly going to make a difference. If you look at the Zips projections, he'd be far and away the Mets' best pitcher by a lot if you just go by the projections. He's at about a 3.6 WAR. The best Mets pitcher is Clay Holmes at 2.2. I'm not so sure those projections. I mean, we're playing fun with numbers here, even with the projections with Alonso. But, don't even take projections. Take where an average season is with those particular guys, and I think you get the same kind of a thesis from the Alonso conversation we had in the open. With Cease, I'm not so sure it makes a big difference. So, just something to think about. I want Stearns to measure twice, cut once. I think it's in a situation where he's been here a year. The Mets have success. The Soto signing is a great winter. I don't have any problems with everything else they did. If you ask me what would be better, the Mets ripping apart the farm for Cease or re-signing Alonso, re-sign Alonso, go to war with what you have. See where you're at the, you know, getting to know you phase mark, you know, by Memorial Day. You have a very good feel about this club and what they need. And I don't think they're going to be in the same position they were a year ago, which they were about to be on a sell-off situation. That was a unique scenario. Everything went wrong for them. I don't think you're going to be in that spot. I'd be shocked. Now, would it surprise me around Memorial Day, they're, you know, in third place in the NL East and maybe a few games over 500 and in the muck with the wild card and still trying to figure things out? I could see that for the Phillies. I could even see that for the Braves. Look, Acuna and Strider may not be ready till June, but that's okay. You got a tournament sport now. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Nobody gets a championship for winning the offseason. Nobody gets a championship for making a big deal in February because they want to win the back pages, or they want to match the Dodgers move for move. That's not what it's all about. That's how you ruin an organization. So that's where we're at. All right, that's it. That's all I got for you today. So what's next? Look, I think we're all just sitting around waiting for spring training to start. I am pretty much done with the hot stove. We'll do a, you know, I owe you the remainder of the trash or treasures. I think now that, you know, the Mets just signed themselves their, you know, their depth piece for Iglesias, that'll, Madrigal, I think that'll be kind of like how we'll cap up the trash or treasures for the offseason. Of course, continue to go to Beyond the Mic. Great content, great premium content that supplements the radio show. Now, I don't normally have, like I said in the open, a Super Bowl show. I like to make Super Bowl Sunday kind of like that baseball holiday. We'll see what the week brings in terms of content and news with Alonzo. But really, the next stop on our journey here together at the Talking Mets podcast is pitchers and catchers. And that's when the journey begins, and that's when we start to assess the roster. I think this spring training, there's going to be some fascinating positional battles in the bullpen, maybe in the rotation, maybe not so much at the end of the roster, but maybe we'll see. You know, we're going to be looking at, you know, especially if Alonzo comes back, you know, what are they going to do with Beatty? You know, how does Acuna fit into things? What's Mauricio's progress? It'll be very, very, very interesting to see some of that. I think the pitching and the pitching conversation and the battles on that front will be a little bit more interesting than on the positional side based on what I see so far. So anyway, that's what we have now. You can check me out, as always, at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And like I said, I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast pretty soon. Till then, take care, everybody. Beat the Mets. Beat the Mets.